Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church. I got one conversation partner back. This is Pastor Chris Hemmelman from First City Church.
Good to be back.
No Dusty White today. However, on Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. Today, we're talking about something as everyday life as architecture, how we build the environment around us. And the topic today is cathedrals.
Yeah.
Because Chris just got back from Spain.
I just got back from a trip.
And he was telling me about all the thinking and reading he did about cathedrals and architecture. And we thought, man, that's actually a pretty fascinating thing that is not, I mean, it's not as everyday life as like what I ate for breakfast this morning or, you know, the struggles of my own soul and my relationships, but it is something that affects us every day, the built environment around us.
Yeah. Had the privilege of getting to tour a number of cathedrals while in Spain and been very inspired. On top of with First City purchasing some land and thinking about building a building. So my brain has just been in architecture lately. And it's been a fun journey.
Hey, Bethany asked me to make you tell that story of how this purchase came about, because you guest preached at Coram Deo recently and you said, hey, everyone, we just got this $3 million piece of property for $50,000.
Yes.
And Bethany was like, I need to know more about that story.
Yeah. So there's a sad side of the story, because it is, we are purchasing property from a dying church. And so, you know, you always hate to see a church that has been in a city doing faithful gospel work since the mid 70s. But anyway, so there's a church in Bellevue that is dying. They have a building. They sit on 7 acres of largely untouched land. And one of our members, who's a deacon, he was a member at that church for 20 some years. So has connections there. His good friend is an elder. And so as the conversation continued, this church was going to probably have to close. We entered into conversation with them. And so over the course of probably about 6 or 7 months, we were just having these conversations as they were deciding. It came to the place where they realized they were going to close and said, hey, we would like to negotiate with you. And so we asked them, okay, what can we do as far as finances of it? And we asked, is there anything we can do financially to help you guys close up shop, essentially? And so they said, yeah, there's a couple things. One, would you be willing to give to the missionaries that we haven't been able to give to over the past several years? So there's kind of just a backlog. And so, yeah, so the majority of what we are paying, so we're paying $50,000, I think about 30 of that is going to missionaries.
Actually just extending the kingdom of
God. Yes, going to gospel mission. And then paying for their, you know, the commission for their real estate broker and a couple part-time staff office employees, giving them a severance, and then some, you know, paperwork. So we were, yes, happy to do that. I mean, so it's essentially a gift to us, but we wanted to bless them in any way that we could as far as, you know, what are the financial sides of it. And so we are excited, although at the same time, man, there's a lot of decisions to be made on the other side of it too.
Hey, this is one of the fun stories though. This has happened for many of our friends in the state of Nebraska. So the Well Church in Hastings got a church building from another church that had property that got handed it over to them. Two Pillars Church in Lincoln occupies a building that used to be owned by Grace Chapel. And when they moved, sort of made a really sweet deal for them to buy that. You guys getting a church building from another church. So it is, even though it's sad for churches to die, it's also fun to see churches recognizing, hey, we want our building to stay in the hands of someone who's going to do gospel ministry instead of to get torn down to build a shopping center or a car wash or whatever. And so it's really fun to see buildings get to be perpetuated to another generation, even if it's a different church that owns it.
Yeah. And they turned down an offer. There was a commercial developer that offered them a good chunk of change and they turned it down. And when I went to meet with the remaining congregation to talk with them, that was one of the things that I said. It's like, one, this is hard because you guys are, this church is dying. And, but also to say, for you guys to kind of hand this off to us, knowing that we want to continue gospel ministry on this property. Like that's what this property was purchased for. The mission to reach Bellevue is going to continue. And so there's many ways you guys are still contributing to the faithful proclamation of the gospel. And it really was cool. They're as hard as it is, that their posture towards us was very much like, we want you guys to have this. And so I was very blessed by that.
Man, what a great story. Praise the Lord for that and the faithful vision of that church. Now what you get to do as a lead pastor is raise funds, which is what every lead pastor wants to do, in addition to preaching the gospel, leading the mission, and making disciples, is, oh, let's just raise some dollars.
Yeah.
But that's part of the calling.
Yeah. And what's interesting that kind of segue into this topic is while I was in Spain, and you know, everything was kind of new when we went over there, and so Mindy and I were just kind of processing the blessing it was, but you know, we're walking through these beautiful cathedrals, have building on my mind. But then I really started to feel this strong conviction. Like, as we raise funds, I want to cast vision for building a beautiful building. Like, now, obviously.
Oh, you mean you don't want a metal pole barn?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, praise the Lord.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Right, sometimes that's all a church works. Can do,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Here's what's interesting. I think you're going to get us into this as we talk about it, but the tendency in, well, what I would call evangelical Christianity, even though that term is kind of a fraught term, is what's the cheapest building we can build, because we want to put all the money into, you know, missions, or, you know, the mission, quote unquote, of people. And many of the Catholic and Anglican traditions thought very differently about what both the stewardship of money and also the stewardship of space, of physical space. So I think it's interesting that there's something in kind of evangelicalism that's sort of like a building is a bad thing to spend money on. And you certainly, when you go to look at a cathedral, think, well, there are people in history that didn't think that way.
No. And even the typical aesthetic for an evangelical church, like the worship space, it's typically no windows.
Black box,
you know, you have to make it dark, bring in the lighting. And again, does the Spirit move in those places? Yes. But I am growing in conviction that when we get to this place where we talk about this as a congregation, that I'm going to cast the vision for beautiful space. Because here's the other really cool thing about this property. It's on a hill. And so this building that we're going to build is going to be on one of the highest points in the city. And so people will see it.
Yeah.
And so just even the visual of First City Church wanting to build something beautiful in that city that everyone's going to be able to see, and not so that, hey, look at First City Church, but so they will come and hear the gospel and be discipled. And so there's a lot of things that are compelling here to me that my, you know, as I've been reading about cathedrals and spent some time in it, has really encouraged me as I think about that very hard work. Because I, you know, asking for money, I'm not really excited about that, but I'm really excited about casting vision for building a beautiful space.
All right, let's talk about your vacation. You went to Spain. I don't know a thing. Chris and I have not talked about cathedrals before this podcast. So you've been ruminating on this. Tell us what you saw in Spain that was particularly sort of impressive to you.
Yeah, so the first cathedral we went to was a relatively new one. It's right across from the Royal Palace in Madrid. I think this one was built like in the 1800s. So, and it was fairly impressive. We also went to the cathedral in Toledo, which the city of Toledo is a World Heritage Site, like the whole city. And so one of the things with Toledo is it was occupied by the Muslims for, you know, 800 years or whatever. And so there's different, just the influence, the architectural influence there. But that cathedral dates to, I think, the 1200s. And then, but the two most impressive cathedrals we saw is the cathedral in Seville, which is the largest Gothic cathedral in the world. It's the fourth largest church overall, but the largest Gothic cathedral. And I'm not exaggerating. When I walked into the area, my tears welled up in my eyes because it was so beautiful and expansive. Like, your heart just went up, and just to be in that space was incredible. Then in Barcelona, we saw the Sagrada Familia, which is not a cathedral, it's a basilica, but it is it's currently under construction, and the architect is kind of so if you think of kind of modern architects, so Frank Lloyd Wright and then Antonio Gaudi are the two. And so Gaudi's the one who designed the Sagrada Familia, and it is it's hard to describe. Just when you think of blending kind of traditional Gothic and modern together, it's just a beautiful space, and the use of light inside this place was unbelievable. So those were kind of the highlights of the churches that we saw.
They've been building this last one for decades, is that right?
So the late 1800s.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the hope was, they were hoping to be done in 2026, which would have been the 100th anniversary of Gaudi's death. But because of COVID, it kind of set them back. And so they're probably, what our tour guide said, those are probably 8 to 10 years from being done. So once it is done, it won't be the largest church as far as square footage, but it will be the tallest. The spire at the top will be the tallest in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did this, you got to thinking, you have a book in front of you related to cathedrals and space. I'm just curious what this sort of has provoked you to think about related to how our convictions about God map onto our thinking about space.
And I've been interested in cathedrals for a while. I actually did a talk in a chapel at TCA when they were in the medieval period, so a year or so ago, a brief one on cathedrals and kind of dipping back into, doing medieval studies. But for me, cathedrals are theology in architecture. Like they're theology put to architecture. And I've always found that fascinating that you walk into a space and say, everything here has theological purpose. And if you think of the medieval times, and they will tell you this when you're there, everything is meant to tell a story. Like people, the literacy level was low. And so you taught through these images. And so say what you want about the excess and the statues, but there were true, like they were there to teach and inspire and to actually disciple people. And so the thought that I actually create space with theological purpose and that everything here is meant to move through me through kind of a liturgical pattern in this space is so incredible to me. Like to be that thoughtful and to say, well, the shape of the cathedral has theological meaning. The height and the windows and the fact that the altar is placed where it's placed and where the nave is placed where it's placed and you have these chapels placed where they're placed. You know, everything there has specific theological purpose. And it's not just, I think sometimes the cynical version is just we're trying to build this very ornate, monument to look at how great we are, or this is, overly.
There's a reason that narrative exists because the Catholics did that for a while.
And it's true. I mean, you have to admit there were ways in which that is true. Yes, absolutely. And that's what I told Mindy when we were in the cathedral in Seville. I said, say what you want about the excess, but what you can't deny is when you're in this space, your heart is elevated. Mm. Like you are lifted up and you just want to keep looking up the whole time. And again, yeah, there are things in there that I would theologically have an issue with. You know, the fact, there's these ginormous crucifixes with Jesus still hanging on the cross. And, there's shrines to Mary. There's plenty in there that I have theological issues with. But as the architecture of the building itself, take out the statues and the excess, but just the building itself is what is so fascinating to me.
So do cathedrals, is there like a baseline floor plan of like every cathedral has these features to it, or do they vary all across the
spectrum? They're
like, so, you mentioned the word nave, which is a common word. And I assume the reason it's common is because every cathedral has one.
So before that, answering the question, defining what defines a cathedral, that is not actually an architectural thing. It is the seat of the bishop, of the archbishop. And so what makes a cathedral is actually the function of the church. Is that the church that the archbishop, the center of the diocese. And so that's actually the difference between a basilica and a cathedral. They have very similar architecture, in many ways have the same architecture, but so there's a administrative function that makes it actually a cathedral.
Is it true to say, I haven't been to Europe? That's not true. I've been to Europe, but not for a very extended period of time. And Europe is too big of a word. I've been to Paris once. I've been to Spain once. But is it fair to say that the cathedrals are a little bigger, like a parish church would be a little smaller.
Right.
And a cathedral would be a little bigger because cathedrals are usually in the larger cities, which is where the bishops usually work from.
Yep.
So like as you're thinking about some area, it kind of follows, it doesn't really follow urbanization, but as Europe grew, the cathedrals tended to be in population centers and then they were surrounded by lots of parishes and smaller churches. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah. And the cathedrals were intended to be this, often were in the center of the city.
Yeah.
And so they were intended to be the center of the communal life and lots of things took place in the cathedral, not just worship. And so they tended to be bigger because you had to get more people in. This is where, the holy festivals would be held. And so you just had larger congregations there. But also as a monument to significance and permanence of, the church and the faith, they were trying to establish those as well. So yeah, that added to the size. So the book that I have, which is a book that came out just a couple of years ago called Heaven on Earth by Emma J. Wells, who's a British scholar. is a fascinating, is a really good read. She's a very clear, lucid writer for a historian. And you can tell she actually takes the faith of these architects seriously. I don't know what her own, you know, if she claims faith or anything, but she takes the faith, that the sincerity of these folks seriously, which just gives much more of an empathy the way you write, even when there's, you know, you can see some of the motivations weren't exactly godly. But she does a good job in the beginning of kind of highlighting the history of what, it, you know, kind of how the within the church, early church, you and the church started actually having buildings once Constantine allowed Christianity to be legal. The early church buildings that were constructed followed more the Roman basilica that had one style. And then once you get into the early, you know, 1100s, this Gothic style is really what started to emerge. And that's when people think of cathedrals, they typically think of the Gothic style cathedral because the high point of cathedral building really was this time period.
Remind me, it's been a long time since I took art history. When we talk about Gothic, there's some markers that you're looking for. What are those?
So the markers of Gothic are the flying buttresses are one of them. The pointed arches. And so when you see the arches, just the way they're designed, point.
Like the Cormdale Church logo.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So what's funny is, so the whole term Gothic, was at first a pejorative term. It's supposed to, this is the architecture of the Goths, the barbarian tribes that, you know, and so it was a movement away from the beauty of Rome, Roman architecture, which is really funny to consider these structures we think are beautiful. At one time, people looked at them and go, that's just, you know, barbaric. Yeah. And so also for Gothic cathedrals, the height, this is when they were really trying to make them much, much, much taller. And then, you know, lots of stained glass windows and the use of light is a significant marker of Gothic cathedrals. And so you'll walk into, you know, a Gothic cathedral and there is this sense of dark, but there's so much light pouring in that you have this beautiful contrast that takes place. But to your previous question, the layout and the design. And so you have things, so like the nave, which is traditionally, kind of strictly speaking, is kind of the area where the congregation is going to sit. And depending on how wide or narrow of a space, I mean, you know, something like ultra traditionalists will say it's just kind of the center section where people sit. Some will say, well, it's just kind of this whole area where people congregate, but it's just the main area you walk into. And all cathedrals, the design is to move you from west to east, because the east is pointing to Jerusalem. So you come in the west side, you walk into the nave, that's where the kind of congregation, but you move towards like where the altar is, where the choir is, that's moving towards the east. And then the way that cathedrals are constructed, they're longer than they are wider. And so if you look at from a bird's eye view, looking down, they're shaped like a cross. And so there'll be a cross section as well. So right there, you know, the theology, the significance of that. But to move from west to east, so you're moving towards Jerusalem. There's kind of a liturgy towards the altar.
I don't want to interrupt, but let me ask a question. So, you know, we're used to Google Earth and drone photography. And like for us, when you think about like looking down from the top, I'm thinking like, oh, a satellite image. Why do you think someone living in the medieval era who never is going to have an aerial view of the cathedral, what is it when you walk into the nave? Does your mind just realize like, oh, this is shaped like a cross? I mean, how would that sort of register to a pagan person living there who's walking in there for the first time? Or is that part of the beauty of it? Is it sort of dawns on you over time?
Yeah, I think that's the, from what I understand is that there's an instruction, a liturgizing into the building. And so like learning the meaning of the building, learning the layout and the purpose of that is the teaching of the gospel, the teaching of scripture. And so just even the learning to navigate the building is a lesson in navigating your faith.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
So, yeah.
And sorry, interrupted
you. No. It's a good question because you wonder, like, what was it like for people to worship in these spaces and understand the various pieces? And every where cathedrals are going to be different is exactly what's, you know, kind of what's up front and center. So different cathedrals kind of have different focus. So some are dedicated to maybe the Virgin Mary. There's a cathedral in Spain that is dedicated to James. Supposedly, that's where his body is buried. Which, by the way, so this is also two really cool things. So the cathedral in Toledo, there you go down into the crypt, and oftentimes in a cathedral, you know, you have people buried in the cathedral, famous church leaders or saints or whatever. You go down in the crypt and you actually see the skeleton of this woman. She's got her burial clothes on, but you see, can see her skeleton, and it's Saint Ursula, which I'd never heard of Saint Ursula, but according to the story saying that she was a British princess, and she was traveling to Rome with, depending on the story, maybe like 100 of her attendants who are all, they're all virgins. They run into Attila the Hun and his crew, because the Huns were running rampant through, Europe at the time. And Attila's like, I want you to be my wife. And you're, these women are going to be, they're going to marry my guys. And they're all like, no. And so they were all martyred. And this took place. I've read two accounts. One was like 438. Another one, it was like into the 500. So you're, but you're talking about early Christian. And so here's her body, this martyred Christian. So whether all the, you know, the stories are true or not, you're still like, this is a Christian from just after the fall of the Roman Empire who was martyred for her faith.
And her bones have been here ever since.
Yeah, her bones have been there. And so it was like pretty cool. But, and so at the Cathedral of Seville, I should have showed you a picture of this, is the tomb of Christopher Columbus.
Oh, wow.
And so that's where he's buried. And so he's got quite the,
we used to have a day tomb named after him, I think.
I think
not
so.
Anymore. He didn't, he discovered America and then he fell on hard times.
Yeah, I don't know if people, if maybe some of you listeners won't
colonial,
think that's cool, but.
Colonial but, settler. Yeah.
So I don't know what my point was before the, but the instruction, oh yeah, so the dedication. So there's the, there's a cathedral in northern Spain that is supposedly where James, not the brother of Jesus, but the brother of John is buried. And so you will often have cathedrals that have an emphasis on a particular figure in scripture or a particular saint. And so a lot of the statues and the teaching kind of things will emphasize those, but you're always going to have the story of the life of Christ. You're going to have Christ front and center, and you're always going to have, images of him as a child, as a man exalted, you know, crucifixion exalted. And so there's all that teaching. You're going to have, the apostles are going to be everywhere. And so you're going to have kind of your standard teaching tools and lessons from the Bible that are going to be there in different ways, but there's also going to be other lessons, other saints, other people that you're like, okay, let me teach you about this person as a way to encourage you in your faith. And so, yeah, you see various people pop up in these various cathedrals.
I was just remembering the only time I visited Paris. Which it was a stopover on a, on another trip. I was with some friends who had lived in Paris who were missionaries. And they were like, we had like a, I don't know, maybe call it a 24-hour stop. And they were like, hey, let's grab the train. We were at Charles de Gaulle Airport, which is way outside Paris. They were like, hey, let's grab the train. We can go into the city center, have dinner. We, you know, we can only be there for like 5 hours, but it's worth doing. I was super tired and jet lagged, but I was like, it's Paris, let's do it. So we get on the subway, ride for like an hour. Get out in the city center. I'm with this guy who has lived in Paris and kind of knows his way around. We come up out of the subway. I turn around. There's the Notre Dame. You know, this is before it burned.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember how, I didn't even go in it. I was outside on the street, you know, a block away. But I just remember coming out of the subway and like, first of all, it's daytime. And it's like, oh, it's really beautiful here. And then you just turn around. And I just remember like I couldn't breathe for a minute. I was like, holy cow, that's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like you're just kind of overwhelmed
yeah.
with beauty.
Yeah.
And that's just the outside of it, you know, just looking at it. Because you because it had that imposing sense of like, oh, this is the center of a place. This building is telling a story. There's a beauty here that sort of like takes us out of our current moment and pulls us back into hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine what it's like to sort of go into these places over and over again. I mean, that was my experience just standing outside of a cathedral. And then the line was like 2 hours long. And you're like, well, I got to do some other stuff in Paris too. Yeah. I can't just go to Notre Dame. Yeah. But
I've had, you know, been blessed to be able to travel to some different places in Europe. So I've been in, you know, Westminster. I've been in Canterbury. I've been to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And each and every time, and they all have, you know, their distinguishing features, but each have just that sense of this is, there's just something so awe-inspiring about this. Again, say what you want about the excess. I will say, you know, St. Peter's Basilica is impressive structure. It is jaw-dropping. But for whatever reason, it was a little different experience than what I had like in Seville. And I think to some ways, you know, Seville, it's so big that the ornateness of it actually kind of gets lost in the size, which I thought actually simplified the space.
Hmm.
And so you weren't so distracted by all the, just the ornateness and kind of the, you know, gaudy sides of it. And you're just like, this is just such an impressive structure. And the windows are so impressive. And so there's, you know, again, I want to be honest about, you know, you can find the flaws here, but to be in, I mean, when is the last time you've walked into the space where you were going to worship God and it moved you? Like, just, whoa, this is beautiful. There's something, just being in this space, is, it gets me there. And that's what is so compelling to me too, is that you can create environments that move your heart to the Lord, not a move your heart to excess of how beautiful this is and just kind of leave it there, but it's actually moving you to worship. And that's what I felt. Like, I was like, where's Eric Goodell? I need him to start leading worship right now in this space. It would be so amazing just to worship God in a space like this, because my heart is already up, and it wouldn't take much.
What do you think, Chris, is the takeaway for the people who aren't going to Spain this year? You know, it's like, some people listen to this podcast, are like, cool, they're going to get up tomorrow and go to a construction site or raise their kids or, you know, go to school. And so for most of us, I think we can appreciate, okay, man, there's some beautiful things in the world, and our ancestors in the faith have made some impressive contributions to human culture, you know.
Yeah.
But we always say, you know, how the gospel connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. So what do you think is the takeaway, or the thing that we need to carry with us from your experience and just from the reality of what those cathedrals speak to us about the heritage and the tradition we stand in? What should we carry with us as just like people trying to live in the modern world in a, I don't worship in a cathedral. I think our building's beautiful, but it's not, it's definitely not.
Oh, you have a beautiful building. It was a joy to be able to preach, several Sundays ago, and it just, that space, it was, yeah, it just, it, there is something. So yeah, very blessed with that. Yeah. It's a good question. And Mindy and I actually had a lot of conversations about this kind of idea of what do you do on the other side of this? Because when we were at the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, one of the things, and so I got a biography on Gaudi, so I'm starting to learn about him, but he was just a very fascinating architect, very devout Catholic. And for him, art was about mimicking God as a creator. And so for us, we are like, what it means to be made in the image of God is to create beauty and to cultivate beauty. And so his designs incorporate a lot of nature as far as some of the symbolism. And so I'm not typically fond of kind of modern styles, but it worked, man. Whatever Gaudi was doing, it worked for me. But the thought that occurred to me is that you can cultivate beauty, and you don't have to be in a cathedral. You don't have to be wealthy. You don't have to, you know, whatever, you know, it's not a matter of how much money you have, but just the idea that space matters, and space, whether it be your home space, just whether it be the kind of between people, wherever you are, that you're cultivating the sense of beauty, that space, where I'm at matters, the environment matters. And I know the environment is more than just physical space. It's also relational space. And that was something we were talking about too, is how do you cultivate that sense of just presence? And so I think that's a lot of, you know, kind of the practical side of it is, what is it, if you boil it down, what is it about these things? It's the presence. It's the environment that they create, beauty. And so what does it look like to cultivate that in the spaces you inhabit, whether that be through your presence, whether that be through the way you can actually control the physical surroundings around you and the resources that you have, but to really take presence seriously, I think is the ultimate takeaway.
Let me make a connection that might be a stretch, but you can tell me if it is or not. I was equipping some guys, training a small group of guys recently toward spiritual leadership, and we were having some conversations about the qualifications of elders in scripture and just what does it mean to be mature in spiritual life. And one of the guys asked, he said, hey, this is great, but this, you know, we're talking a lot about soulish things, you know, soul level things. He said, if you ask my father-in-law who lives in a small town in Iowa, he would tell you, all the Christians in our city are like the people who their lawn looks really unkempt and they haven't trimmed their hedges and they're just not good neighbors. And my father-in-law is frustrated by that. He feels like something's out of sync with that. And I wonder if there's a connection here in the sense that what's missing is a Christian aesthetic.
Yes.
That like,
yes.
If I love the Lord, I want to care about beauty, not in a way that's excessive, but in a way that's appropriate and that values the aesthetic for its own sake.
Yes. Yes.
And so like a nicely manicured lawn is a certain aesthetic. a house that's kept in decent order creates a certain aesthetic. There are people who, you know, there's some people who just have really strong capacities here and are very artistic, and you know, they sort of have a really high sense of beauty. But what I hear you saying is that actually all of us as Christians should care about cultivating beauty in our sphere of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that some aesthetic sense is a godly thing to have.
Yeah. And somewhere along the line, we bought into the lie. I mean, we took the reality that some people do that for excessive show and just sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater to say, no, this is actually what it means to be made in the image of God, to cultivate beauty, and that there is an aesthetic that comes with our faith. Because again, we're embodied beings. We love this world. We're part of this world. We're given this world to cultivate. And so I think if we minimize that, we minimize the physical, we minimize space so much that we disregard it, we miss out. We miss out. We shallow out ourselves, but then we miss out on the opportunity to bless people. Because this is also really the power of creating good space. It's because hospitality, like what that does. And so again, it doesn't mean that your hospitality has to be this big show, but if you're thinking well about how can I cultivate a beautiful space, a comfortable space to invite people into to be blessed by, I mean, that is powerful. And I think as Christians, we should care more about that.
It's interesting to think about the fact that many of these cathedrals, the gospel stopped being preached in them long ago, but tourists still come to them looking for an aesthetic experience. And so there might be content missing, but what they're encountering is a sense of the transcendent in ways that perhaps do something deeper than we can imagine.
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the tour we were on in Barcelona, there was a younger couple. They're probably in their mid-20s, probably just been married. Mindy and I were talking with them a little bit, and they were just kind of telling us about the night before. They've been out kind of drinking, and they were joking about, we went to Taco Bell at like 2 a.m. in Barcelona. And so you could just, you know, probably weren't believers. But the impact that... And they had enough, I think they had enough foundational, because he was asking some questions about some of the carvings and stuff. And like, is that such and such scene from Jesus, you know, different things. But you could just tell the space gripped them. Like it just moved them. And so, you know, you could be very quick to just say, oh, you know, there are a couple, you know, young 20 Gen Zers who probably have no interest in, you know, spiritual things, but then they walk into this space and immediately they're captivated and asking questions. And so, again, are we going to be able to build the Sagrada Familia in Bellevue? No, unless someone has like $4 billion they want to give us. But you can create that kind of response.
Yeah.
As you were saying.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, thanks for taking us a little bit on your vacation with you.
Thanks for letting me share.
And talking us through some of your experiences and helping us think about the importance of beauty and physical space. I'm now, Spain's now on my list. I want to go see some cathedrals.
Yeah, you should go.
So
yeah.
I don't have the money or the time, but one of these days, I'll get there. Yeah. The goal of this podcast is primarily to equip our churches for discipleship and mission, but we realize there are a lot of you who are Christians and or church leaders in other contexts. So thanks for listening in. We always pray that our conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We always love to hear from listeners. So always, if you have questions or future podcast topics or want us to think about something, talk about it on the podcast, send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. Hey.